Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, May the 1st. Welcome to the 1st of May. Welcome to the month of May. Well, today we're going to be looking at this big debate about the Iran nuclear deal. And the debate was basically put on the table by the Prime Minister of Israel, although we knew that this was going to be a month for the Iran nuclear deal, because I believe that it has to be renewed, or the expiration, or there's an important date on May 12th. So we knew that it was going to be in the news this month, but I'm not sure anybody expected the type of information that we got yesterday from the Prime Minister of Israel. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I have a post over at the American Thinker about asylum, the right way to do it and the wrong way to do it. And I think that these people at the border are obviously doing it the wrong way. But let me begin. This is a story that I just read this morning regarding El Chapo. I'm sure most of you remember El Chapo, the man who was the cartel leader in Mexico. He was captured. He escaped. He was captured. He escaped again. And he was finally captured for the third time. And now he's sitting in a jail in New York, waiting, I guess, a trial here in the United States. Where the trial is, I'm not sure. I know it's underway, but I'm not exactly sure how much more it has to go. But obviously, there is going to be a decision by the judge up there. He's in a federal court, so it's he's being accused of federal crimes against the United States. But there's a very fascinating story that I don't think it's going to help El Chapo's case at all. In fact, it's going to make it even more likely that this man is going to spend the rest of his life in jail. And that is the story that a few years ago, El Chapo and his people killed six American missionaries who were down in Mexico. And the story was corroborated by one of El Chapo's bodyguards, or one of the people in his group. These were six missionaries, young people between, let's say, 23 and 35. There were a couple of them who were married. And according to the man who corroborated the story, El Chapo himself killed the men, and then the women were raped and eventually killed as well. And we really didn't know any of this before, because it had been, of course, there's so many other murders that he had that I'm sure there were many, many stories like this. But this is the first time that we know where he singled out, or where he targeted, or where he killed an American national. And I think this is going to be very damaging for El Chapo, as I say, for whatever his trial in New York is. Another interesting thing for me, and that is, and you kind of see this in what is happening in Mexico. I mean, the cartels are obviously killing a lot of people, and there's a lot of violence, and Mexico, unfortunately, is undergoing a very serious problem with domestic violence. By domestic, I mean in the country, that is, violence. And but what's interesting is that the cartels have not intentionally been killing Americans. There may have been some killed being in the wrong place at the wrong time, but they have not been singling out Americans, probably because they don't want the United States involved in this. Well, it turns out that here he did kill six Americans. They were missionaries. Whether he knew that these people were Americans, I suppose that's a question mark. But he had to know. I mean, the people were probably speaking English and telling him to, or at least speaking Spanish with an accent. But anyway, this was a really bad news for El Chapo. And once again, it confirms why this man should be where he's at right now, in a prison in New York, and hopefully he'll be there for some time, and hopefully he'll be behind bars for the rest of his life. Not a good man, El Chapo, and this shooting of American nationals is really horrible, absolutely horrible story. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Iran nuclear deal. It's in the news. Everybody's talking about it. First of all, President Trump had to make a decision on the deal by the 12th of May. He had to make a decision on the deal, so it was going to be in the news anyway. But now the Prime Minister of Israel put together an amazing presentation yesterday confirming that Iran is in fact going along with its nuclear program. I mean, it's unbelievable how they got this information. you know, I've always said the Israelis are the best when it comes to intelligence. And when they tell you something, bet on it. And it's just remarkable the amount of information that they were able to get. And the prime minister made a very good case. Now, I watched not all of it, but bits and pieces of it. I have no way of telling you, but when I watch him, I have no way of knowing whether this information is correct or not. So I basically, at times like this, what I do is that I rely on two things. Number one, whether or not I trust the person who's telling me this, and my own instincts. And my own instincts have always said to me that Iran is a provider of terrorism, a promoter of terrorism, and you wouldn't want Iran with a nuclear weapon, not in that region. And the other reason I believe it is because I believe the Prime Minister of Israel. I think he is a decent man, and his statements on Monday regarding the Iran nuclear program were then later supported by our Secretary of State, Pompeo, who says the information that he presented is exactly right. So it kind of leaves us in a bind a little bit, because we don't know what President Trump is going to do. But my guess after this presentation, if I had to bet money, I don't usually bet money on these things, but if I had to bet you a glass of water, as they like to say, I would think that he's going to kill the Iran nuclear deal. One of the problems with the Iran nuclear deal, and I said this, by the way, 3 years ago whenever it came up, the biggest problem with the Iran nuclear deal is that President Obama never presented it to the U.S. Senate for ratification as a treaty. Had he done so, it would have been a lot different. The end results would have been a lot different than this deal that we got into, but it would have been a much stronger deal, a much easier deal, and I think a better deal for President Obama's legacy. Right now, President Obama's legacy has just suffered another crushing defeat, because without the Iran nuclear deal, Obamacare, a disaster, you know, his legacy every day just seems to be falling apart. But he would have been a lot better off, had he come back from these negotiations, called in the leaders of the Senate and say, folks, this is what I've negotiated. This is why I believe it's a good deal. And I'll have people from my administration over at the Senate making the case for this deal. But I need your vote. I need you to certify this. I need you to ratify this with a treaty vote. Had he done so, as I said, I'm not sure if he would have gotten it, but he probably would have gotten it, and it would have been a much better deal than the one that he passed on his own, a deal that I think by all accounts is just falling apart at the moment. Now, the French and the Germans, they want him to stay on the deal, and that's because France and Germany are benefiting from a business standpoint with Iran. It's not that they care about nuclear weapons, because they don't have to worry about that, because they're protected by the United States. But as far as business, yeah, they're doing a lot of business. They're doing a lot of business with Iran. So that's why they're defending this. But I can tell you, I'm inclined to tell you that I believe that President Trump is going to walk away from the deal. He's going to walk away from the deal, or he may do sort of similar what he did with DACA, which is to say, I'm not going to renew this, but I'm going to send it to the Senate for ratification. That may be the best thing to do as well. But one way or the other, this deal is not surviving the month of May. It needs to go to the Senate for ratification. That would be Plan B. But lesson of this story is, don't make a deal like this around the world without going to Congress first and trying to get your treaty ratified. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpiz. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And in fact, we have a link to Carlos on the show information. If you click on that, it'll take you to his schedule. Well, another big topic this week is, or in the last 24 hours, I should say, is what's happening at the U.S.-Mexico border. I have a post at the American Thinker about this today where I basically say, look, I understand why people want to come here. I understand. And I also understand the situation in Central America is not a good one. Countries like Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, they're undergoing horrific violence. It's not really the poverty that is driving them out. I think that sometimes we think it's poverty. No, no. It's not the poverty. It's the violence that is happening in these, particularly when you get out of the of some of the urban areas. I mean, the violence is just absolutely horrific. The shooting of people, cartels, fighting cartels, young people being forced in many ways to participate in these cartels, you know, if they want to save their lives. So if you were living in El Salvador, if you were living in Honduras or in Guatemala, you would rather have your son or daughter grow up in L.A. any day, grow up in Los Angeles or whatever city in the United States. I understand that. I understand. We're seeing something like this down in Venezuela as well, where you're seeing more and more people from Venezuela rushing to the border with Colombia, the border with Venezuela, and literally just walking into those countries, and they're creating quite a humanitarian crisis themselves. I think my biggest problem with this whole incident in San Diego is the fact that these people made too much noise to come up. When you have a caravan and you're basically saying, you know, we're going to overwhelm the border, we're going to come in, almost a sense of entitlement that they should be getting asylum in the United States. That is simply the wrong way to do it. And I don't know who's leading these people. I don't know who's behind this, but whoever it is, this is not a very smart way to do it. Again, I understand the reason why they're coming, and I certainly appreciate how difficult things are in Guatemala and so on. But we also have a right as a country. The United States has a right as a country to say, look, right now we just cannot handle anybody else. Right now we just cannot do it. I mean, right now we're just going to have to wait a while and go back to your country, and maybe later or we can consider a smaller group or whatever. But this idea of showing up at the border in a caravan, saying, jumping the fence and saying, you got to take me, that is simply the wrong way to do it. And I don't think they're winning over it any public opinion when they're doing something like that. And I think winning over public opinion is extremely important, because Americans have always had a very generous attitude about people who are seeking asylum. Look, I have personal experience here. Our family came here in the 1960s as political refugees. And the generosity of the American people is tremendous when it comes to this. But you cannot do what these guys are doing, just showing up like that at the border. That's the wrong way to do it. Again, I don't know who's giving these people advice, but whoever it is not helping them one bit, not helping them one bit. So I don't know. I mean, I think so far the president, the Trump administration is handling this as well as it can be done. But the message has to be very clear. If you want to come to the United States and you want to seek asylum, that's not the way to do it. That is not the way to do it. I also don't know why Mexico has tolerated this. This is not in the best interest of Mexico to get the word out there that if you get into Mexico and go through Mexico and get to the border, that you'll have a chance to get in. If that word gets out, Mexico is going to have an even bigger problem with respect to illegal immigration and Central Americans going through. So I don't know why Mexico hasn't stopped it. Maybe they have, because there were more people before than there are now. But I don't see how this helps Mexico one bit to become sort of an avenue, if you will, for people who want to come to the United States. Just a couple of closing thoughts today. We say happy number 79 to Judy Collins. She was one of my 79. I couldn't believe that she was that old, but I guess she is. She's 79 years old. You know, great songs like Amazing Grace, Send in the Clowns, Both Sides Now, Someday Soon. I mean, just some wonderful songs that she sang over the year. And if you're a baseball fan, and if you're a Nolan Ryan fan, then you remember May 1st, 1991, when Nolan Ryan went out and pitched no-hitter number 7. Seven no-hitters for Nolan Ryan. I mean, that is amazing. That is just truly, truly beyond belief. Seven no-hitters. The next guy on the list is Sandy Koufax. He's got 4, and he was a pretty good pitcher himself. So the amazing Nolan Ryan. Thank you so much for listening, folks. We'll be back the next time. A little bit of rain, we think, here in North Texas. But other than that, spring. We have spring with us. Bye-bye, everybody.